Welcome to the Your Oxygen Mask First podcast. I'm Erin Young, and this is a space where we explore ways to help the helpers. Because you can't help anyone before you help yourself. So sit back, put your own oxygen mask on, and enjoy the ride.
Thank you for joining us today. I am so excited and pumped to be talking to my friend, Corey Lynn. This is the very first interview that I've done face-to-face with people.
Ooh.
It is. Everybody's been over the phone and in different states, different time zones, and you were the first person face-to-face, and it's kind of strange with you staring at me like that, but I'll get over it.
So, what if I wink at you?
That makes me feel better, actually. Okay. I like it. So Corey is somebody that I've known for a while, and she is also a 911 dispatcher. So I'm going to hand the mic over to her to talk about who she is and a little brief background of her experience.
I am about to turn 40, so that's fun. About 18 and a half years into dispatching. I started at a different agency and was there about 14 years before coming here. So I've been at a tiny agency and now at a big agency. And my hobby that I do outside of work is baking. It keeps me from being an alcoholic.
Which is ironic because tell them the name of your baking blog.
Baking and bourbon. Although I haven't really blogged about bourbon yet. My husband keeps reminding me I need to actually do that. So
fulfill the prophecy of your name.
Yeah, I need to actually do something with bourbon other than drink it while I bake. But I do that all the time.
Do you put bourbon in things?
Sometimes.
Oh.
A really good pound cake recipe with bourbon.
Have you ever brought it to work?
No.
Good. Trick question.
We'll talk after.
Okay, that alcohol bakes off anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And I have a 8-year-old about to be 9-year-old son and a 9 about to be 10-year-old stepson.
Going on 18 and 21.
Yeah. Well, my son's going on 9 and my stepson's going on 40.
Oh.
Yeah. He's quite mature.
Very much so. And they're big, huge Star Wars fans, much like you are.
Much like me, indeed.
Yes. We all love Star Wars.
Who doesn't love Star Wars?
Yeah. And then you were saying that you went and saw Solo.
I saw Solo yesterday and I went solo.
You went solo to Solo? Solo. That's amazing.
I know.
Were you solo?
I cracked myself up.
Disappointed in the movie? Because that's what I'm hearing.
I went in with no expectations and I was not disappointed.
Don't get your hopes up and you'll never be left
exactly
out.
Exactly right.
Right. Okay, perfect.
It was awesome. Fine. It wasn't like prequel bad. It wasn't a bad movie. It was a fine movie. It just wasn't my favorite.
Was it visually
entertaining? It was visually very good.
Well, there you go. At least you got some entertainment out of it.
Yes.
Maybe some popcorn.
No popcorn.
No popcorn?
I had popcorn last. I went to the movies twice yesterday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You're a busy girl.
I saw Deadpool 2 with my husband.
Okay, good. So at least you got to bring somebody with you.
Yeah, we had no kids yesterday, so it was movie day.
So, Corey, getting serious here, okay. Into the heavy, heavy stuff.
Heavy.
How does baking help you with stress release from our incredibly stressful, crazy job?
Well, it gives me something to focus on to the point where I tune out everything else going on. It kind of tunes everything else out in my head. And so when I'm baking, I'm focused on baking and there aren't those thoughts roaming in my head. I've got music on or a podcast or whatever, and I'm just doing my thing and everything else gets drowned out for a while, which is really important. Because even if you're doing something relaxing, like working out, or, well, it's not relaxing, but if you're doing some other stress relief thing, like working out or taking a hot bath or going for a walk or whatever, you know, you're still kind of alone with your thoughts. Mm-hmm. Well, with the baking, it's enough of a thing to focus on that it drowns all that out. So it's a nice break. And it's something positive. Mm-hmm. It's like whether you're baking for something fun, like a birthday or an event, or for something sad, it still brings people like a little bit of happiness to have good food. Mm-hmm. So like I made some alcoholic cakes for a funeral about 2 years ago, and his wife was so happy to have alcoholic cakes. And I got the biggest hug and it brought a smile to her face. And, you know, so to have something positive, because we don't deal with very much positive in our job at all.
And food is love.
Food is love. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, I tell my husband all the time, I'm like, I don't know what else to do for people when they're sad. So I just bake them stuff.
Right. Like, you're not much of a hugger anyway.
I give some pretty decent hugs to certain people.
You never hug me.
I'll give you a hug.
Okay, good.
After the microphones are gone and stuff.
Okay, perfect.
So I'm going to knock them over.
Yeah.
I'm clumsy.
So baking helps with your focus and it's a distraction.
It's a distraction, yeah.
Right. Do you feel long-term benefit to doing it? Or is it something that when you kind of pull it out when, you know, you're just kind of, you have a rough day or something extra bad happened? Or is it something that you commit to doing on a consistent basis to help with your self-care?
I do it pretty consistently. I try to bake at least one thing a week. I'm not always successful. Just sometimes I don't have time, you know, but most of my bad days are in the middle of my work week and I don't have time to do anything. So it has to kind of wait until my day's off because I work week in graveyard. So, you know, usually I'll bake something on a Tuesday or Wednesday. And so it kind of gives me a break later, but I don't really get to use it as immediate stress relief because of my schedule. And I'm trying to get better. I'm trying to practice. I started the blog to kind of force myself to do it more, although I'm terrible at blogging regularly. It's something I try to do fairly consistently just to keep it up. And I want to get better and I want to learn more things. And, you know, I'd like to eventually kind of have a side business going, do like doing birthday parties or whatever. It'd be fun. I'd enjoy that.
Well, I think that's important, too, because you are not your work. Your job is not who you are. You are Corey. You are a mom. You are a wife. You're a baker. You're a blogger. You are not just a 911 dispatcher.
And it's funny because early in my career, I felt my identity very much was my job.
Mm-hmm.
That was who I was, especially at my last agency when we were so enveloped in it because we were so close-knit. We were in the station. We were around the officers and we're all very family-oriented up there. Like like all our free time is spent hanging out with each other, even outside of work and talking shop. And it was a wonderful environment, but it felt like that was my identity. And my whole life was centered around my job. And the longer I'm on, the more I feel like I'm not my job, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I would be perfectly thrilled to be working from home at this point in my life. I would love it, you know, just bake for birthday parties, do stuff around the house. And I never, ever thought I'd be at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Ever. But I feel very much like I'm more than my job now, which I think is actually a good thing.
No, very much so. I think especially when we're younger and we're excited about the job and it becomes a part of our identity because we're very proud of it. Mm-hmm. And it is definitely, you know, a feather to put in our cap. What do you do? Well, I save lives. Right. I am the first responder.
Right.
You know, I get to be in the middle of everything, but not get shot at. I mean, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Especially if you're, you know, 25 years old.
For sure.
But as we get older and all of the stress and the micro traumas and everything compounds, and if all you have is that job to hang on to when things don't go well, even when things go right, if that's all you are and all who you are, you're going to burn out so much faster.
Right.
And experience the dreaded compassion fatigue.
Yeah. I've seen that happen all too many times with people over the years. So, you know, I think I've made it kind of past that hump. You know, I'm to the point where things don't affect me like they used to at all. Mm-hmm. I still get, you know, I had a pretty bad day last Saturday, just a compounding of terrible calls all day. It was hard. And Sunday, I just wanted to kind of shut down and be alone. We had a going away party to go to and I didn't want to go. I didn't want to go be around people. I just wanted to be in my house and not have to pretend like I was okay, because I wasn't okay that day. I'm okay today, but I wasn't okay Sunday.
Right.
You know, but also with the length of time, I'm very good at recognizing that now and very lucky to have a very understanding husband, you know, because it's his coworkers that were going away. And, you know, I finally just told him, I said, look, I just need to decompress a bit. And he was great. And he's like, oh, you know, it's fine. Don't worry about it. I'll let him know that, you know, you just got some stuff to do and don't feel pressured to come by or anything like that. And I did end up going by for a few minutes, but just knowing that I wasn't disappointing him and knowing that he wasn't going to pressure me to go was really a big deal for me.
Yes.
It's just, you know, it's nice to have somebody understanding because a lot of people don't have that in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't used to. This is why they're used to. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, he's great. And so that's very helpful, you know, but while I don't get compassion fatigue, I get other things that happen, you know, that I have to work through and process.
Right. I bet going to Costco after a busy week is a nightmare because there's just so many people.
Yeah. Like we went on our honeymoon like a month, a little over a month ago, almost 2 months ago, and we were in the middle of nowhere for like 10 days. Mm. So we did Wyoming, Montana, Colorado as quickly as we could. I did not like Colorado. No offense. New Mexico, Arizona, Utah, just in the middle of nowhere. I mean, we had stretches of road in Wyoming. We're driving 80 miles an hour. You drive for 45 minutes. You don't see another car.
Oh, wow.
It was amazing. So we get back on a Saturday and then get up Sunday and go. And I went to go to Costco because we had no food in our house. And I got like two things and I had to leave. It's like, I can't do this.
Yes. Like,
I've never felt that before. It was almost like a panic attack. Like, there are too many people here. You know, so, but yeah, it can be like that after a bad shift too. It's like, I don't want to be around anybody. This is just too much. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to be around society. I want to be at home away from all the things.
Right.
Sometimes the things are not fun.
Right. So. Because you can take home all of the things that aren't even meant for you. And right. You don't even know it.
Right.
Everybody else is all their crap and their bad stuff.
Yeah.
You have to put a protective bubble around yourself, which is so hard, especially if you're very nice and caring and compassionate like you are. It's really hard to maybe separate that. So I think maybe as you've grown up in this field, mm-hmm. you've learned to separate that. And
yeah,
it's important for other people who may be just starting their career to learn that early on that you need to have your bubble.
Need to have my bubble. And sometimes people break into that bubble and it's hard. Mm-hmm. About 2 weeks ago now, I was driving home from taking my son to school in my truck. And I wasn't even texting. I was at a red light and I literally looked down to just check the lock screen on my phone. And this bicyclist who's sitting at the red light next to me starts screaming at me. She's like, get off your phone. You got a bicyclist right here. So I'm just like, I'm just going to look forward. I'm not going to engage her, you know, and she didn't like that I ignored her. And she started pounding on my car windows, my truck. And she's like, stop pounding on my windows. And then like, luckily the light turned green. And so I went, but it's funny because what was going through my head during that, you know, I always have the mantra of you can't reason with unreasonable people.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned that. Over the years. So it's like,
or highly intoxicated people.
I'm not gonna argue with her. She's clearly got something going on in her life that she can't deal mm-hmm. with, because like she is unhinged and I don't want to escalate it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing going through my head is I don't want to escalate it to where the police get involved, because then that's my job,
right?
And I don't want to involve my job in my personal life. And so, you know, I don't, you know, there's no point in engaging in this woman, because it's going to, you know, everything. I feel like an encounter with a person in public can affect my job. You know, if they mm-hmm. find out where I work, or they, you know, if I'm wearing a work shirt and they see it, or they write down my license plate number and it gets run. It's like, you know, I'm so afraid of my work being affected, you know? Mm-hmm. So between those things, I just drove off. Like, I just left her. I'm like, oh my gosh.
And you wished her a fabulous day.
I did. I really did. We're going to be friends. I'm going to find her so we can go to lunch or something.
There you go.
But
it's just a big misunderstanding, really.
Yeah. But it's funny how dealing with people that are like that all the time at work made me not... I don't know. I'm kind of used to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little unnerving being in public and having her bang on my truck window. But it was like... So it's just like somebody I would talk to. It's just like being at work. You
know? But it's funny that you mentioned that. I was reading something today and it talked about how some of the like top 9 or top 10 complaints that people who are in 911 dispatch have that create to overall stress. Obviously the big calls and the horrible things that we hear and have to deal with. Obviously that's number one. But one of the things that keeps coming up are the what seems small and little but annoying and chronic, mm-hmm. you know, the barking dog person that calls, or the person that calls and says, you people, you need to do this. And it's not anything listen, the police honey. Can handle. Oh, yeah.
It's my favorite.
Or the civil problems. But because public doesn't really understand what we do and how we bridge that gap between the public and first responders.
Right.
It's really frustrating, especially if you feel like you can't change their mind or you can't change that conversation because they're so set in being upset and in their moment that you cannot help them and direct them to the right spot because they're so angry. Mm-hmm. That is what really gets to us.
Well, and when we deal with really, really awful traumatic calls, the traumatic call itself, while it's horrible, I have tools to deal with that. I know how to deal with that. And if my dealing with it myself isn't working. I have EAP available. I'm not ashamed to go see a counselor if I need to for PTSD.
Holla!
Yeah, been there countless times, right? Mm-hmm. But the hardest part is the call afterward for me, because inevitably it's going to be something like really mundane. It's going to be a car parked in an alley that's been there for 4 days and it's 11:30 at night and they want it gone right now, mm-hmm. even though it doesn't affect them. And they are indignant and entitled. And immediately after dealing with a dead kid or a suicide, or you sit down to phones immediately after having an officer involved in a fight or whatever it may be, the next phone call after is inevitably something really, really mundane. And inevitably, it's going to be someone who's really not nice about it. Mm-hmm. This isn't my experience. It's just my luck.
Right.
And it's hard to, you know, to pull back and be like, okay, they don't know what I just dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know that. And so I try to have ways of explaining, like, look, you know, we're dealing with some serious calls right now. We have some major incidents going on. We'll get there when we can. I try to come off as compassionate, even if inside I want to scream at people.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, that is way harder than dealing with the actual trauma, just because I don't have a way of dealing with that.
Right. And people have absolutely, you know, no clue of the contrast.
Yeah.
The contrast yeah. of the ups and the downs and the lefts and the rights, where you have, you know, a kid that just accidentally overdosed on parents' prescription, mm-hmm. and then the next call that you get is somebody who wants their problem to be your number one focus, and how dare you not react the same way to their problem, because right. you know, this is an emergency to them. Mm-hmm. I once had a lady who called because the pool wasn't open on 911, and mm-hmm. I tried to counsel her and say, ma'am, I'm really sorry, but this is 911, you can't call for this, and this is for emergencies. And she's like, honey, this is an emergency to me, it's hot outside. She has some choice words in there, which I'm not going to say, because this is a clean show. But, and that was so early on in my career, and it was really hard for me to understand, because I understood the contrast of the ups and the downs and, you know, what I had just taken five calls mm-hmm. prior to that. But the average person doesn't get that.
Yeah, they don't get, you know, after taking a really horrible call, you know, 9.9 times out of 10, we don't have the luxury of stepping away from our workstation to go take a breather.
No.
Because we got five other lines ringing. And three call takers.
You know? And two sick call-ins.
And two sick call-ins. And everything's going, somebody on radio needs a break. You know, so we don't have that time to kind of process it and decompress. We just have to shove it in and wait.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be wait till the end of shift or wait for a week before we have time to process it. Or we don't get around to it and it compounds. And then it gets really bad. Mm-hmm. We end up at EAP again. But we don't have time to process it. You know, when you immediately hang up and... The very first thing you do is within a millisecond answer another phone call, and it's something like that. It's really hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really, really hard. We have concrete ways of dealing with trauma, but the non-trauma stuff mm-hmm. can get really, really old,
yeah.
especially at that time.
Yeah, that's something we're going to have to explore more, because that's fascinating to me. And I just kind of put the pieces together, because a lot of people who do kind of understand our job, they're like, oh, you know, it's so horrible what you deal with and what you hear, and then not realizing all of that secondary stuff that really, really makes the bad stuff bad.
Yeah.
Without you even realizing that they affect each other.
Right.
So we're going to talk about that with somebody somewhere sometime soon.
Cool.
I don't know who. We'll figure it out, but I'm fascinated by it. So that kind of brings me back to your whole baking and having a hobby. Mm-hmm. And why do you feel that? Maybe it's not baking, but maybe it is crafting or scrapbooking, quilting, knitting, whatever. Why do you think that that's important?
You have to escape it. You know, while I'm at work in between calls, I've been doing these dot to dots. They're really neat. They have 1,000 dots per page, and they're like amazing superheroes. I'll show you after we're done, because they're really cool. You know, or having a good book. But you got to have something to get your head out of the job for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you just live in the job 24/7, you're not going to make it 6 months. I mean, you're just not. That's why our turnover is so high, I think, one of the reasons. But you have to have something to get your head out of it. And it's really, really easy to bring the job home with you. Divorce rates with police officers is very high. Suicide rates are higher. My dad was a cop for 30 plus years. you know, I saw him growing up where he would come home and he just didn't want to talk. He'd just sit in his chair and watch like Andy Griffith and not talk to anybody. Mm-hmm. And once I got into the job, I understood what was going on. It's like, this is his processing and shutdown time. We have no idea what he's dealt with at his shift, but it can be very similar in a different way, but the same type of thing with us, where it's like, you go home and you don't want to talk to anybody. You don't want to deal with things. You don't want to come home to your kid and answer, you know, asking 6,000 questions. And mm-hmm. my son specifically is very inquisitive, extremely.
Yes, he is.
He's very inquisitive. So he'll be like, hey mom, how was your shift this weekend? You know, what kinds of calls did you have? What kind, you know, and I've had to explain to him, look, for one thing, I've gotten good at filing them away. So I can have calls that I can recite word for word on my shift. And then once my shift is over, I go home, I go to bed and I wake up and I can barely remember what calls I took the night before. Mm-hmm. I don't know where they go, but they go somewhere in my subconscious. And so I file them away. And so sometimes I'll have little things to tell him because he's interested. And sometimes like I have to say, I can't talk about it, bud. I just don't want to talk about it. And he kind of gets it.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't at first, but now he kind of does. You know what? Sometimes we deal with things that we just don't want to talk about. Mm-hmm. You know, they just, you know, there's things that you don't need to know about in the world. And there's things that sometimes I just don't want to talk about, maybe later, but not right now. You have to learn to like leave it at work, you know, and sometimes I'll vent to my husband or whatever, but, you know, and then once it's out, it's good. But, you know, it's really easy to just be the job if you don't have anything outside of your job that to do mm-hmm. other than laundry. You know, you've got to have, you know, it's really good to have like an interest that you do with, like you said, whether it be knitting or crocheting or, you know, fishing or hunting or whatever. And for me, it's baking. Mm-hmm. So, but to have something to occupy my mind on my days off so it doesn't go back to try to dwell on the things that I've done mm-hmm. or heard, the things you can't unhear, you know.
Right. But you never see.
That you never see. But I think often our mental picture can be worse than the reality.
Yeah, absolutely.
The movie we have in our head of what's going on can really probably be pretty dramatically worse than the reality of it. Mm-hmm. But... so that's why I find a hobby on my day off.
And it benefits everybody, really, because you can't eat all of your delicious cupcakes. So
yeah. You
do spread the love, and I appreciate do. That.
I struggle with my weight enough. I got to give it away.
One day we'll be on the same shift, yes. And then I can benefit from your goodies.
Yes. Right now they mostly benefit my husband's work, just because mm-hmm. that's how it works out. And I don't want to drive all the way up there. My day's off. But yeah, so I just give it away, and it makes me happy to give it away. Not just for my own weight. Yeah, because people really enjoy it and it's, you know, it mm-hmm. feels good. It feels it good does. To make people happy.
And... well, and we just saw that article on the Facebook about a researcher, psychologist yes. that said that baking for other people is actually psychologically really good for you.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, you sent me that and I was like, this is spot on.
Right. So
true.
I will post that in our resources page and the episode list for our listeners if they're curious about it, because it's a true fact. If you bake for other people, it makes you happier because mm-hmm. brain and science and stuff.
Mm-hmm. And chocolate.
Hey.
I like chocolate.
Yes. So Corey, your blog is absolutely hilarious. I love you and your writing.
Thank you.
You're funny.
Thank
you're self-depreciating, but you're funny.
I appreciate it.
So you can find her at where?
Bakingandbourbon.com.
Right. Because we drink the bourbon right. while we bake, but we don't bake with bourbon.
I do bake with bourbon sometimes. I intended to kind of talk about different bourbons I've tried,
mm-hmm.
but I just haven't gotten around to it. And bourbon's expensive, so the kind I like anyway. Right. So, today we're podcasting with vodka.
Yes, Corey did make me a beverage before we started. It's, you know what, it's podcasting with a beverage is way more fun, just so right? you know.
Yeah
see, this is
learning experience.
It is a very yeah after more technical difficulties now we finally figured this thing out. We figured it out. So well, Corey, I love you. Thank you love so you much too. For coming. If you guys want to find her, she's at bakingandbourbon.com, and I will post that also in the links in the episode list.
Thanks, appreciate it.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen today, and I hope that you found something that really resonates with you. I can't wait to share even more, so please subscribe to the podcast, and you can find links to our resources in the description and at youroxygenmaskfirst.com.